VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the Internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And friends, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Since the Dobbs decision was released overturning Roe, a battle has been underway in many states on the matter of either protecting human life or targeting human life. But one of the more ironic happenings occurred in the state of Florida on April 1st, where on the same day, and by the same court, two different decisions came out on abortion. One that affirmed no right to abortion in the Florida Constitution. The other would undo this life-affirming decision this coming November on the ballot. Well, other states also are seeing abortion on their ballot in November. And breaking down this matter for us today, we welcome back constitutional attorney Matt Staver. He is a founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt has three landmark cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. He's the author and host of the radio broadcast Faith and Freedom and Freedom's Call. Matt, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be with you as always.
Matt, really, for me, it's a head scratcher from the Florida Supreme Court. Released their decision last week on abortion. You argued the case before the Florida Supreme Court on the November ballot issue. Help us understand these conflicting decisions by the court.
Well, they're certainly different decisions, no question about it. Now, they're different sets of law that they're looking at, but in the one, we won 6-1, and that was a case that we filed two amicus briefs in on behalf of Liberty Counsel and Liberty Counsel Action. In that case, it was a landmark blockbuster decision on April the 1st, and the 6-1 justices, one dissenter, they ruled several things. Number one, they overruled the 1989 TW case, which is Florida's equivalent of Roe versus Wade going back to 73 at the Supreme Court. But it's even worse than Roe versus Wade. That opinion was so liberal back in 1989 when I filed a brief at that time. I've been fighting that since the court actually brought it into existence in 1989. I filed a brief hoping to stop that train wreck in 1989. The court went the other way. But in that case, they said that a, quote, fetus is a highly specialized group of cells totally dependent upon the mother for sustenance. And it made Florida more liberal even than Roe versus Wade. So after Roe was overturned, no difference in Florida. In fact, more people flocked to Florida for abortions because some of the other states were passing pro-life laws. Well, the Supreme Court on April the 1st ruled that that was overruled. All those decisions since 1989 are gone. They said there's no right to an abortion in the Florida Constitution. Amazing decision. We worked 35 years to achieve that victory. They, in doing so, upheld the 15-week abortion ban, which was what brought this case to the court in the first place. And in doing so, there's a 6-week heartbeat law that will go into effect by May the 1st. The legislature passed that last year, but they held it until the Supreme Court ruled. And if they upheld the 15-week, this one goes into effect. So in one fell swoop, Jim, this is the amazing thing. Florida moves from the most liberal abortion state in the nation to the most pro-life abortion state in the nation in this one fell swoop. And at the same time, within moments of that decision, the same court released a 4-3 decision. And that decision allowed this Planned Parenthood-backed, ACLU-backed abortion amendment to go forward and possibly be placed on the ballot in November. And if that gets on the ballot, if that gets certified with the requisite number of signatures and it gets voted on, if it gets passed, it would be more liberal than even the more liberal 1989 TW case.
Right.
That abortion amendment is deceptive. It should never be on the ballot. The three dissenting women justices were right. One of the justices, the chief justice in the majority, he also acknowledged that this was vague. It was subject to all kinds of multiple interpretations in terms of the actual proposed amendment, and it could fool the voters, but nevertheless allowed it to go forth. That is inexplicable because it could undo everything that just was accomplished on April the 1st if this is passed. Now, we have a big fight ahead because, number one, it's not certified yet on the ballot, so it may not go on the ballot this fall. We'll know that in the next several weeks. If it doesn't go on the ballot this fall, it could go on another ballot later on, not this year, but some other year. But if it gets on the ballot, Florida has a 60% threshold to pass any state constitutional amendment. But you can imagine, if this gets on the ballot, there are going to be probably $100+ million from Planned Parenthood and other abortion advocates being pumped into Florida to push this deceptive, life-killing amendment.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but a lot of deception in the process as well. And so, Matt, as we examine this potential for this amendment being on the November ballot, you, through press releases I've seen, you've used terms like this is broad, it's destructive, and it's also deceptive. So just enlighten our listeners here. We've got many listeners in Florida as well. What is meant? What do you mean by broad, destructive, and deceptive?
Well, it says that no law shall penalize, prohibit, delay, or, you know, have any kind of impediment to abortion prior to viability. Now, viability is not defined, but that's going to be a late second, early third trimester abortion. So there's no law that can stand except for parental notification. So that means no law, no parental consent, no informed consent, no waiting periods, no clinic regulations, so no health and safety, only parental notification, which is nothing. Nothing. So, and then after viability, what happens? Well, it says that you can still have an abortion after viability if a healthcare provider says that it's necessary to protect the woman's health. Well, the word health is not defined, so that means anything. But even worse, healthcare providers not defined. If they wanted to limit it to a medical doctor, they could have cited the specific section of the Florida statutes, but they did not. A healthcare provider in Florida, believe it or not, includes a lot of people who have no medical training, 58 categories. And of those categories, and I'll just name a few, there's many of them like this, a 911 operator. That's right, a 911 operator, a orthotic fitter, the assistant to the orthotic fitter, a massage therapist, and many others who have zero medical training. And those individuals would be able to say, oh, this baby's not viable. I mean, even if it's late third trimester, oh, it's not viable. Their opinion would be unassailable. They would have total veto. They could also say, well, it's viable, even though they have no medical training to say so. But it's still necessary for the woman's health. And there would be no way to resist that. So bottom line, from the moment of fertilization until and up to including birth, abortion would be legal in Florida, and even clinic health and safety regulations would be wiped away because those could be considered an impediment to abortion. We've already seen in the Roe versus Wade post-litigation from the 1970s onward that the pro-aborts clearly argued that any kind of health and safety regulation on abortion clinics, that was an interference with abortion. So you can imagine those same kind of things would happen in Florida. It is no way that the people of Florida, when they were approached to sign this, they weren't even told, many of them, that it was about abortion. They were just told that it's about women's rights, women's health, nothing about abortion. You had to really press them multiple times to even get the word abortion out of their mouths. Mm. So they didn't know they were signing a petition to put abortion on the ballot, number one. Number two, they did not have the language in front of them to be able to know how broad this is. They would never, even pro-abortion people, they're not wanting to wipe away all the, I mean, there's a very, very, very small number that would say zero regulation, no health and safety regulations either. Because what this does is it empowers these back alley butchers to engage in all kinds of practices of horrible, that not only kill the baby, but harm the mother and permanently injure or kill the mother. And guess what? Florida will be not able to pass any law or regulation because it will be in conflict with this abortion amendment. So that's how broad it is. On the other hand, along with this, interestingly, in the other case, as well as this one, Florida Supreme Court, and this is the sort of the pros and cons of this decision, the Florida Supreme Court left the door open to come back with another case to argue that Article 1, Section 2 of the Florida Constitution, that says no natural person shall be deprived of the right to life, includes the unborn, so that there would be a constitutional right to life in the Florida Constitution already by virtue of the use of the word person, which outside of the Constitution, that word person is frequently in the statutes applied to the unborn child or an unborn person. That's the quotes from the different Florida statutes. So there's a lot here to unpack, but it is far from over. A great victory, 35 years in the making, but then we have this serious issue to contend with and make sure that this ballot initiative doesn't move forward, or if it gets on the ballot, that it is shot down.
Okay, so you mentioned that that this is something that is still up in the air yet as far as whether or not it's going to be certified to be on the ballot. What are signatures being evaluated right now, or what is the process of decision?
Yeah, you need to have 10% of your signatures, and that triggers the Florida Supreme Court review. And they review it to make sure it complies with single subject and it's not deceptive. They were wrong on their conclusion that it complied with both of those. The dissenters were correct. But be that as it may, that was the issue. But now they have to get all the signatures certified. Now they say that they have over 800,000 some signatures that they gathered. They need a certain amount based upon the last presidential election. So they need 800 and some thousand signatures to put it on the ballot. 891,523 signatures. They say that's what they need. But they not only need that cumulative number, but they also need to have that same percent. I think it's 8% of those people who voted in each precinct. So it has to be distributed throughout the state. They can't just get a bunch of signatures from one part of the state to the neglect of another part of the state. So they can have more signatures than they need in one precinct, but they have to have all their precincts covered. And so we're looking at that right now to see, number one, did they do that? And the state of Florida has not yet certified this, has not yet certified it. So they're going through the count. They're going through the validation for registered voters, eliminating duplicates, and making sure that they are reading the percentage that they need to reach each one of these precincts. That has not been decided yet. Now, even if it is decided that they did get it, there's some other issues here that may be challengeable, and that is the fraud that was perpetrated when they gathered these signatures, because the spouse of one of our staff members here at Liberty Council and others that I know of, they were approached by signature gatherers, and they were told, oh, it's about women's rights. They had to press them multiple times before they even had the word abortion come out of their mouth. Mm-hmm. So people that got the signatures, they were misleading the people into signing something that they had no idea what they were signing.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Well, and I understand Governor DeSantis is very much going to be involved in leading the charge in opposition to this as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, Florida has, changed significantly more conservative since he has been governor. So it's going to be a big fight if it's on the ballot.
And we'll be back in 1 minute. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. And friends, Florida's not the only state that's looking at abortion being on their ballot in November. So stay with us in our next segment. We'll all talk about what's happening in other states as well. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, Noah's Ark Explorer from the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, where did Noah build the ark?
Chris, we simply don't know where Noah lived nor where he built his boat. This is because the flood of Noah's day totally restructured the surface of the earth. There are no geographical remnants of that pre-flood world. Everything about that world is totally gone. Now, it is true that two of the four rivers named before the flood are the same names as today's rivers, but I suspect that Noah named these rivers like he did because they reminded him of the previous rivers. They couldn't have been the same because beneath these rivers are tens of thousands of feet of flood-deposited strata. They simply didn't exist before the flood. At least that's how I see it from a Back to Genesis perspective.
Thanks, Dr. John. If you'd like to go back to Genesis, visit us on the web at www.icr.org. That's www.icr.org.
is Crosstalk on VCY America. Yes, abortion, same day, same court. Two different decisions came forth from the Florida Supreme Court. Constitutional Attorney Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. Their website, lc.org, lc.org. Matt, just before we talk about what's going on in some of the other states, one thing that's of note is that the three female justices on the Florida Supreme Court, they were unanimous in their opposition to the ballot question for November, were they not?
Yeah, they were unanimous. And also, it was a female Justice Grosshans who wrote the other opinion, the 6-1 decision that overruled abortion in Florida, going back to 1989. But all three female justices dissented. I knew when we argued the case, and I was part of the argument, the state of Florida Solicitor General's office also argued. I wish they would have been stronger than they were, but be it as it may, you know, I was able to argue, and we had briefing. The three female women justices had really good questions, and I knew after that argument that they were not buying that this was going to comply with the law. But we had four others. You know, all we needed is one of those other four to get a majority, because I knew the three, based upon what they were saying, they were just pushing back against the other side on this issue, and they weren't getting their questions answered properly. So,
I mean,
we just needed one of the other four.
One of those
we didn't get it.
One of those male justices, weren't they even asking that a tattoo artist would be able to give authorization?
Yeah, Curiel actually, because on Monday of that week that we argued the case, just a few days before, we filed the list of all those different medical, all those healthcare providers, including the tattoo artists. And so they had read it. And so they realized, oh, yeah, even a tattoo artist would be authorized under this. So they knew that. And then the Chief Justice actually is the one who raised this question to the Solicitor General's Office, the Florida Attorney General's, and said, what about Article 1, Section 2? It says no natural person shall be deprived of the right of life. Would that include the unborn? In fact, it may include the unborn. And if that's the case, I'm concerned about what the proposed ballot initiative doesn't say. It doesn't let the voters know that this could possibly conflict with an existing constitutional right. So he was very concerned about that. And he never got his questions answered by the other side, but he remained concerned. He said it several times. I'm concerned about what it doesn't say. The people don't know. And he actually said that in his opinion as well. But right. Nevertheless, for some inexplicable reason, the Chief Justice voted with the other three, and that made it the 4-3 majority to allow this to move forward. I think it's a terrible decision.
Yeah.
Wrong on all points, but be it as it may, that's what we have to deal with now.
And, Matt, as a result, Floridians need to really stay posted as to what's going on with this issue in the state and not be duped by the campaign that's going to ensue. If it is on the ballot, there is going to be much deception in this campaign.
Oh, yeah, there already has been deception, but you can count on the fact that it's going to be a lot of deception. And they will funnel, because, you know, what they want to do is they want to not only put this on the ballot in Florida, but they also want to sway the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
They want to bring more Floridians out. Right now, after Governor DeSantis ran the second time, there are almost a million more registered Republicans in Florida than there were. He won his first election by 30,000 votes. It was a squeaker. But his second election, he won overwhelmingly, trouncing the opposition, and turned what would be blue areas of Florida into red, changed the compositions of some of the very liberal school boards to having pro-family, pro-life members that are now on the school board. Literally every demographic, African-American, Hispanic, women, men, the North, Central, South Florida, all things just went in a completely different direction. Historic change in Florida as a result of that. And I think this really is important for going forward, because a lot of politicians have talked about being pro-life. But after Roe was overturned, some of those were quiet. Like even, for example, in Arizona, Carrie Lake, she's talked about being pro-life. But after the Arizona Supreme Court decision just yesterday, now she's opposing that decision. Governor DeSantis took this issue to the people. whether it was abortion or LGBTQ or what it might be, whatever it is, he took it to the people and he articulated the values and the reasons why these positions are right. And you know what happened? It resonated with voters, and there's been a historic change in the state of Florida as a result.
Wow. Well, Matt, we've got to keep in mind that Florida is not the only state that has a question on the ballot this November pertaining to abortion. Tell us what's happening. I know there's a number of states that will be casting similar votes.
Yeah, there's about 16 states where there's a consideration for a pro-abortion mostly, but in some cases a pro-life amendment. Arizona, for example, the Supreme Court came down just yesterday and said that there's no right to an abortion in the Constitution. That allows the previous law going back to the 1800s to come into effect, which bans abortion except for life of the mother. But now Arizona, they needed over 300, they need about 384,000 signatures as of July 4. That goal has apparently been met, so this likely will be on the ballot. The Arizona Supreme Court on the 9th, of course, did a great decision, but now they're going to go forth on this ballot initiative. Arkansas has banned abortion with no exceptions for rape and incest, but there's a pro-abortion initiative there that is attempting to move forward. That has been approved to move forward, but they still need to get the required signatures, and as of just a few weeks ago, they still haven't gotten the 90,000 plus. Colorado's another one. Abortion is, they're trying to get that on the ballot as well. Those are still being collected, the signatures, so that's not certified. Florida's not certified yet. Iowa, you have an initiative there, the Iowa Legislative Committee, there's a pro-life initiative, actually. I'm sorry, it's not pro-abortion, it's a pro-life ballot initiative, saying that there's no constitutional right to an abortion. That is still moving forward. Maine, however, just yesterday, Maine is not going to be on the ballot. The did not get the supermajority vote in the Senate that they needed, so Maine is no longer up for grabs. It's not going to be on the ballot in November.
That's wonderful.
You also have others, too, that we can go through, Maryland and in Minnesota.
Go ahead and comment on them.
Yeah, the legislature approved a proposed amendment to appear on the November 2024 ballot in Maryland. That's a very liberal one. Minnesota already is exceptionally liberal. There's a pro-abortion ballot. It's remaining in limbo right now because there's some internal legislative debate. But Minnesota is already very liberal on abortion. Not sure that one's going to go on the ballot. Probably not. You've got Missouri as well, that they're trying to push that one on the ballot. That one is still collecting signatures. You also have Montana. They're still collecting or still needing signatures. That has to be done by June 21. You also got Nebraska, still needing signatures. That one's not going to be certified yet. They don't have enough signatures. You also have Nevada. They say that they have enough signatures, and we'll see whether they're able to actually get that on the ballot. New York, there's some efforts there, but that has not secured a place on the ballot yet. You've also got Pennsylvania, that there is a pro-life initiative. That one was passed by lawmakers in 2022 to move forward, but there's a change in the House to Republican to Democrat, and so it's unlikely this will be on the ballot. You also have two more. South Dakota, they're still gathering signatures. They need to have 35,017 by May the 7th. They're still collecting them. I just spoke to people in South Dakota this morning. If this gets on the ballot, they have a plan to challenge it in court. And finally, in your state there in Wisconsin, there's a pro-life ballot initiative that would be available to move forward for a pro-life or at least some restriction on abortion. But they're still waiting on some of the Senate action, and the governor unfortunately has said he would veto any action that would come out that would have this pro-life amendment.
You know, Matt, this is really shaping up to be a very, very critical election this coming November.
Oh, it's very, very critical. And, I mean, really, this is life on the ballot. You know, in Ohio, they tried to pass the 60% threshold, and they didn't get that. I'm
right.
very disappointed that they didn't. If they had passed that for this voter initiative, the abortion amendment wouldn't have passed.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, you know, the churches and people need to get involved, and they need to go to the polls, and they need to vote life. In Florida, you know, we do have there, in that state, a 60% threshold in order to pass a voter initiative. But most states still have the 50% level. So whatever level you have, whatever the laws are, whether it's on the ballot or not, this is going to shape up to be a critical year for life. And we need to make sure that we stand for life every opportunity we can.
Matt, were the waters kind of muddied this week with President Trump speaking out on abortion, saying he's not backing a national ban but wanted to leave it up to the states? I know there are many pro-life agencies that stand in opposition to this, saying, no, it's our duty. Our federal government should protect life. Your comment on this?
Well, you know, I would like to ask President Donald Trump a question. Would he be okay putting up for vote a state issue for slavery?
Right.
So say this state can vote for slavery, and if they vote for it, fine, we can enslave people. But this state, you know, they don't want slavery, so fine, we'll have a patchwork. Slavery's okay in one state, slavery's not okay in another state. Would he go for that? No, he wouldn't go for that. Well, what's the difference? Well, there's human dignity. I mean, obviously slavery's bad, killing is worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So slavery is not a state's rights issue. It's a universal issue that transcends geographical state boundaries. If that's not going to be something that you would say, well, let's just put that up, but let's just let the people vote about it. Well, you know, how about letting the Nazis vote about this?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think they would say? Well, you know, what about life? Life is, the Declaration says that we are endowed by our Creator with the unalienable right to life, not by government. It's not up for a vote. It's not up for a judge to decide, and it's not up for a popularity contest. It is an inalienable right, and their inalienable rights know no geographical boundary. They don't change from Georgia to Florida, Wisconsin to Ohio. It's the same. It is not something up to an individual state to sacrifice its people or to allow that state to be a haven for a neighboring state to come in and sacrifice the people of a neighboring state. That's just not up for popular vote. And you know what? I go back to what I said about Governor Ron DeSantis. Why did Florida change so dramatically? Why is it so dramatically politically different? And we have all these people flocking to Florida, and it's high on education, and everything. It's just amazing transformation in the last few years. Why? Because we had a governor, a leader of the state, who took these values to the people, and he was not afraid to articulate them, and he studied them. And he was able to communicate them, and he would not back down. And guess what? People resonated with him. The politicians should run for life, not from life.
Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Council. Friends, we're opening our phone lines for your questions and brief comments, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Your questions on this issue, your comments, 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
The modern state of Israel has been a nation for over 70 years. When she was formed, most Christians believed there was a real connection with what was going on in the Middle East and Bible prophecy that predicts an end-time return of the Jews to their land. In recent years, a noticeable decline has occurred, especially among young evangelicals who question whether modern Israel really relates to end-time Bible prophecy. In the book, The Case for Zionism, author Tommy Ice answers many of the contemporary arguments being used against Israel. He brings together the biblical, historical, and legal arguments for her existence and the prophetic nature and future of Israel. Dr. Ice lays out the case why Christians should support Israel. VCY is offering The Case for Zionism as our way of saying thank you for a donation of $16 or more. Ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Constitutional Attorney Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. Their website is lc.org. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Matt, just before we go to calls, just give us a word about Liberty Counsel. You are engaged in many, many different aspects of legal action, but also education, a very vital ministry that's here across the United States. But give us a word about your organization.
Sure, Jim. Yes, Liberty Counsel, we founded, Anita and I did, my wife and I founded in 1989 to advance religious freedom, the sanctity of human life, and God's design for marriage and family. Actually, we added that prong a little bit later in the early 90s when that became under attack more significantly. But we advance those values through litigation, education, and through public policy. We have offices in Florida, Virginia, Washington, D.C., and hundreds of affiliate attorneys all over the country. We have cases pending before the U.S. Supreme Court and many other courts advancing all of these values. But, you know, in the last 4 years, every case that we've briefed or argued at the U.S. Supreme Court, we've won, including a 9-0 decision that set the groundwork for overruling this 1971 Lemon Test. So, you know, from the beginning, we had goals to overrule and overturn Roe versus Wade and the 1973 case and this 1971 Lemon Test that devastated, twisted, distorted the First Amendment. And both of those were achieved in 2022. So, you know, my advice to people, my counsel to people is don't ever give up. It's like in Florida. Yeah, we have this decision we have to deal with this 4-3 decision. I don't like it. I think it's wrong. But you know what? You don't get up. Don't give up. You don't get discouraged. For 35 years, we worked to overturn this TW case going back to 1989 in Florida. 35 years. We had some wins. We had some losses. We had some heartaches for sure. But after 35 years, by God's grace, we won. So don't ever give up. Don't get discouraged. God has birthed us for this moment in history. And, yeah, we're going to have some challenges between now and the election and then after. But this is our moment, and this is our moment to make a difference, not only in our community, but in our nation and, indeed, the world.
Again, friends, our number here is 800-733-9829. Liberty Counsel's website is lc.org. Let's begin with Lisa in West Grove, Pennsylvania. Lisa, you're on the air.
Hi, I was just listening to your comments about President Trump and the abortion issue and, you know, the only problem with trying to get a complete nationwide ban is that women are going to do it anyway.
Well, you know,
it'll just be in, you know, illegal, bad circumstances. And I agree, we need to stop killing our babies. Yeah. It's going to bring bad judgment onto America.
Yeah.
But
so we don't legalize it because people are going to do it anyway. But, Matt, your comment.
Yeah, no, I understand. I think you're right. It is a bad judgment on America. I mean, we can't continue to shed innocent blood and have no consequences. There will be consequences. There are and there have been consequences. But, people will do things anyway. But they do that. There are lawbreakers. You know, they steal, even though there's laws against stealing. Mm-hmm. They kill, they harm people, even though there's laws against that. But on the other hand, what happens, and in fact, what happened after Roe was overturned, this is what happened. Many of these states began to have more pro-life laws. What we are now seeing is at a minimum of 5,000 fewer abortions per month since June of 2022. That's tens of thousands of children that are alive now that would not have been alive, that they would have been killed. And it's because the law changed. And so, yeah, we need to make sure that these laws reflect these fundamental values and the most fundamental value, the right of all rights. There's no right that trumps this, and that's the right to life. Because without the right to life, there's no other right that has any significance. The right to private property, the right to freedom of speech or free exercise of religion, it's meaningless to a corpse. Just has no meaning to somebody who has no life.
Lisa, thank you.
You're welcome.
Colleen in Venice, Florida, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say I spoke with one of those petition signers at our library a few months ago when they were out doing that, and it was very deceptively worded. I suspected what was going on there because it was not forthright at all that it was about abortion. And as I questioned the young girl, it did come out that, well, yes, this is abortion also. And when I questioned her further, I realized she had no compulsion either way. She just, she really didn't care about abortion. And I said to her, why are you doing this? And I talked to her about abortion, and she agreed that abortion was wrong. And I said, well, you know, if you feel that way, you really should not be doing this. And she said, I have to. Why do you have to? Turned out she was with a group of Californian people who had come here for the sole purpose of canvassing Florida and gathering signatures.
Wow.
And didn't even live here. So that's what they're doing. And I suspected that was what was going on because she just didn't look at all like a typical resident here.
Colleen, so thanks for sharing.
Shame on them.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you, Colleen. Any comment there, Matt?
Well, yeah, if you don't mind contacting our office, 407-875-1776, or sending an email, liberty@lc.org, we'd like to follow up with stories like that, because that's part of the possibility of challenging this if it gets on the amendment. This was done fraudulently, and who knows? This woman that you encountered might have been somebody who was illegal. I don't know. But they might have done that to entice people to do this. And, you know, it's amazing that even the person who was gathering the signatures didn't really know what she was doing, and certainly wasn't somebody who favored abortion, didn't really have a strong position on it.
Yeah, so again, Colleen, reach out to Liberty Counsel either by email with this information, liberty@lc.org, or give them a call at their offices. And this pertains to others in Florida as well. Maybe you encountered similar circumstances, like Colleen mentioned. You can reach out to Liberty Counsel. Just give them a call, 407-875-1776, 407-875-1776. Dominique in Mukwonago, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hello, I have two questions. Just a little background on my question. From what I've heard and read on statements that different people have made, it seems to me, and I'd like your advice on this, that babies may be safer in some states if we did battle it out state to state. And one of the reasons I say this is that Trump, you know, came out against two state governors that their 6-week ban was a terrible idea. And then Trump said that if he did a federal ban, he would negotiate with the Democrats for a more liberal ban than 15 weeks. And the big pro-life organization, Susan B. Anthony, shot back saying anything beyond 15 weeks is pointless. And there's been a lot of people that have been really frustrated and sad and shocked that Trump said this stuff. But beyond that, if Trump did a federal ban of that nature, wouldn't about 94% of abortions already have happened by 15 or 20 weeks? That's my first question.
Okay. Matt, deal with that question first, if you would.
Okay.
I think you're right. A 15-week, you know, you're talking about 15 weeks. That's pretty late in the abortion in terms of the pregnancy. Most of these abortions would already be done by that time.
Vast majority of abortions are done even before 14 weeks.
Go ahead,
Dominique, with your second.
And then my second question is, yes, I agree, it is a pro-life election of state and local candidates, of questions on ballots for constitutions, et cetera. So I totally agree with that. But can you speak directly on this aspect? The Democrat and the Republican Party are making the presidential election all about the pro-life or pro-choice cause. But since, and I just want to ask, is this just people trying to divide us? Or since the Supreme Court cast abortion back to the state, what is the danger or the advancement that a president can really do? Like, is it a presidential matter, really? That's what I was wondering.
Great. Thank you.
Well, the reason why I think the Democrats are trying to make this an issue is for two reasons. Obviously, they're very pro-abortion in terms of the party itself. But on the other hand, the lack of popularity of their presumptive candidate, Joe Biden. So they're trying to figure out any other possible way to get people to vote. And, of course, Biden is going to be in favor of these abortion amendments. So they're going to say, vote for the abortion amendment and vote for Joe Biden. So it's really trying to get Joe Biden over this lackluster kind of response that he's getting from the populace. So that's really what it's about. What can a president do in general? I think is part of your question as well.
Mm-hmm.
They can do a lot. On the one hand, you know, the Supreme Court said it's not a federal constitutional issue. They were right about that. But, you know, there's also a move in Congress, and Congress, there's a very radical pro-abortion bill that is pending in Congress, and it could pass in the House if that changes, if we have it controlled by Democrats. Certainly that could pass in the House. There's already 213 Democrats signed up to pass that bill. And then it would go over to the Senate. So elections are going to matter. The Senate is close as well. So this bill could pass, and if you had a Democrat president, they could sign it into law, and you'd have a Roe versus Wade national bill. And that's, you know, it's not just the states. It's also Congress. The Supreme Court said it's left to the people and their elected representatives, which means Congress and the people in the states.
So,
and then also beyond that, as what Biden is doing, he's pushing abortion globally, and he's pushing abortion in the various agencies and funding as well.
It's the rulemaking authority, Matt, and we're seeing what he is doing now. I mean, the Veterans Administration performing abortions, Matt, first time ever in our nation's history that we're doing that, and it's through the rulemaking authority that's coming from the president's office and through HHS. I mean, we are seeing abortion that are just run through and through, you know, every aspect of the federal agencies, and that comes from the one who's going to be sitting in the Oval Office.
Absolutely. And then also in the Department of Defense, you know, they are now telling women that they will transport them across state lines to be able to get an abortion. If they can't get an abortion in the state where they're stationed, that they will provide all the cost and expense and the transportation and the time off.
Yeah. Thank you for the call here, Dominique. We're going to move on. We've got Tony, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
How you doing? How you doing, Matt? It's good to hear you on there.
Very good.
I was just trying to catch up exactly being in Wisconsin. You mentioned that the Republicans are trying to do what law exactly to be pro-life?
Well, there is a proposed pro-life initiative there. But,
okay.
That is not going to likely go anywhere because it hasn't gotten through both chambers of the House, and the governor has indicated if it does, he would veto
it. And again, this was a 14-week ban. Again, the vast majority of abortions are before that time. But, Matt, what needs to happen, our Supreme Court of Wisconsin needs to uphold our 1849 ban.
Well, that's
right. Yeah, you already have a Supreme Court. Yeah, you already have that 49 ban.
Right.
Yeah, even this one here, when I say it's a pro-life initiative, probably want to put that in quotes.
Right.
But the assembly approved, and it is a 14-week. In other words, after 14 weeks, you couldn't do it. So it's not much different than the 15.
Yeah. Tony, thank you so much. We're up against a break. We'll take a break here. Matt Staver with us on Liberty from Liberty Council, lc.org, their website. And we'll take more calls right after the break here on the BCY American Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Ramadan was observed in the Muslim world, and in Dearborn, Michigan, a couple Islamists got up and gave a speech at a big event. And what were they doing? They were calling for the destruction of Israel and America. They literally were chanting death to Israel. Then they chanted death to America. And one of the Islamic speakers called for the complete collapse of the American system. He sounded like a Marxist. He sounded like somebody from the Weather Underground. But my friends, this is the point. This is why the Islamists, represented by the green and their Islamic jihadi flags, and the red of Marxism are working together. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And now the Islamists and Marxists are openly calling for death to America and the collapse of our free society. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. Friends, Lord willing, next Monday he'll be back with us again, focusing on the WHO, that's the World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty. So don't miss that interview coming up next week here on Crosstalk. Let's go right back to the phone lines. We have Lily calling in from Arizona. Lily, thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your work both legally as well as through the media. I had an incident where I was outside of a department store and approached by a young person with the clipboard and the pencil and saying, would you like to sign something for, you know, women's rights? And I said, you mean pro-abortion? And he said, no. It was just a back and forth three or four times. Mm-hmm. And I just kept saying, you mean pro-abortion? And he goes, just no pro-choice. And finally he got mad at me, and I was just kind of praying and trying to stay neutral and calm, but to, you know, just say, what you're trying to get me to sign is for abortion. And he wouldn't admit it. And then he walked away, and as he walked away, I said, it's not pro-choice, the mm-hmm. baby.
Yeah.
And this is a thing that I was on a prayer ministry for a women's crisis center, a pregnancy crisis center here. And it was a few years ago, and I would just pray, God, make abortion stop. Yeah. And we would pray in unity, and we'd pray scriptures over the women. We were quiet in the separate area apart from where the women were coming in. And this is an agency that's been going on for mm-hmm. decades. And I learned that Tucson was the first place that ever had an abortion, a legal, legal abortion. But I feel like the prayer element is one part that we as believers in the sanctity of life have to really focus on more. And I just pray, God, make it stop.
Amen.
And thank you for allowing me to say that. And God bless everyone that is trying to further the cause for the life of the unborn.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lily. Matt, prayer is so important in the battle, the spiritual
battle.
Absolutely.
What state were you in when you were approached by this signature?
She mentioned Arizona.
Arizona, okay, mm-hmm. yeah. So, I mean, this is pretty common. This is the template across the country.
Yeah. Deception, folks, and you know who the father of deception is, do you not? Eddie in Rio Grande, Texas, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, brother, for taking my call. I just would like to encourage all the listeners that are out there at this moment, and that there is a promise from God, you know, to all that bear their kids, but it's not the ones that bear their children, you know, it's the one that help them grow up. But brother, my encouragement is to everyone out there that, you know, I adopted my daughter. Excuse me, that if I break up, but like my daughter, 29, she's 29 years old, brother, and her biological mother, she paid $300 for an abortion in Laredo, Texas, and apparently, brother, she ended up being pregnant for us, and I believe that my daughter, she was probably a twin, see, and right now, brother, she's the most beautiful girl that you could imagine. She has her master's degree.
Wow.
She is a choir director. She plays the piano at our church. Brother, there is a God out there that is seeing all things.
Amen.
And there's the best thing that could happen in our lives. To me and my wife,
wow.
We've been married 45 years, brother, and she's 29. She'll be 30 this year. But I encourage everyone out there that's hearing this that there is a way, you know, to help all these families or these young girls that get end up pregnant, that there is, you know, adoption agencies where, you know, they can bring a lot of happiness in their lives,
right.
Especially the couples that cannot bear children, you know. But,
amen.
You know, I just wanted to comment, I mean, encourage everybody out there, brother, that is the most beautiful thing that, you know, adoption.
Yeah.
It is the best thing that anybody can go through and help all this.
Eddie, thank you so very much. Matt, indeed, adoption is the loving option.
Absolutely, it is. And thank you for your very passionate and very compelling sharing with us today.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Eddie. Janet in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm really nervous, so it's hard for me to say this. I was just wondering, can we vote only on abortion, even if I'm against it? What if Trump's our only hope for a conservative president, and we vote for someone else, and then we end up with a Democratic president that would ruin our nation?
Well, I actually have a message that I've done on that issue, and I think, you know, you don't have any perfect candidates ever. You're not going to ever have a perfect candidate. There are always going to be some flaw because they're humans. You're not going to have a perfect candidate unless Jesus runs for office, and that's not going to happen because he's King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He doesn't need elections. But that's the only time you're going to have a perfect candidate. You're always going to have somebody who's flawed. Somebody's not 100% in everything. So what you have to do is you have to go through like a checklist, pros and cons. What would this candidate do if this was elected? What would this candidate do if this is elected? But you also have to consider, is this candidate electable? So you don't want to not vote, and you don't want to just throw your vote away on somebody who just has no chance at all. You have to vote, and you have to choose the one that most aligns with our biblical values. May not be perfect in everything, but what's one who most aligns with our biblical values? And that's how you have to, I think, approach this. Voting is critically important. We cannot not vote, because if we do that, we allow somebody else to appoint an agent to act on our behalf. And oftentimes that agent may be very hostile to our faith and values. We can't just throw our vote away and say that our conscience is clear, because that's just like not voting. We have to vote for the one that is winnable, but is more in line, although not perfect, maybe sometimes off, but more in line with our Judeo-Christian values, that would advance more of our values than the other one would denigrate them. So that's the process and the thinking, I think, that you have to go through, and we all have to go through.
Thank you, Jen, for the call. We're down to about 20 seconds. We're going to squeeze in Andrew, New Mexico. Your quick question or comment.
Yes, Jim, thank you for taking my call. You know, I live in New Mexico, and it's a very heavy Catholic state. Mm-hmm. However, everybody votes Democrat, and there's no conscience in there. So I was thinking this morning, I said, what about making some bumper stickers like there used to be? Hmm. You can't be both Catholic and pro-choice.
Yeah, I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you for the call. Matt Staver, thank you from Liberty Council for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good to be with you as always.
Critical issues, folks. Reach out to Liberty Council, 407-875-1776.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.